Gordon Smart, Matt Morgan.
Gordon Smart, I'm Matt Morgan here. We're here for 2 weeks. If you are new to our show, welcome aboard. If you've been a regular, I've done it about 6 weeks now, Matt, haven't we? We've been together for this.
Yeah, all added up.
Enjoy your company, Matt Morgan. You make me giggle.
Thank you, mate. It's nice to be here.
My favourite thing's when you do impressions and little accents.
Yeah, I can't do them on demand.
That's a shame.
Do you want?
I like the posh gentleman. Did you remember I got that legal letter years ago and I showed it to you? For a whole night, you pretended to be a lord from somewhere.
A letter from a lord, and I'm sure he used the phrase... what did he say? Know this of me.
Yes, he said, know this of me, smart.
Know this of me, smart.
So for about 6 months...
It's the voice of the Emperor in Star Wars.
It was, wasn't it?
Be your doom. That sort
destiny.
Of
ah, yes.
That's why when I had maggots in my wheelie bin, which isn't a euphemism, I put a... Like, they were just... There's nothing I could do about them. So I put this, like, tub on top and filled it with water.
Yeah.
And in my head, I was going, now this will be your tomb. I sort of sealed them in.
This is Radio X. Gordon Smart. Matt Morgan.
I was speaking recently to Catfish and the Bottlemen, Matt Morgan, another band we like to talk about in front of you and introduce you to. And they're an interesting bunch. We first met them when Van McCann was called Ryan McCann, and he was about, I don't know, 19 years old. Mm-hmm. And they were playing gigs in car parks, outside Kasabian gigs, that kind of thing. And they now, in the last year, have been on tour with Green Day to all those amazing stadiums in North America. You know, huge, historic venues. And I think the mood was a little bit tense when they were supporting Green Day, right? So I think it was quite a tough thing to do. Don't Green Day drink anymore? So there was quite a few strict rules about behaviour. Anyway, they get to the end of the tour. And at the stadium gigs, they have a thing called the ego finger. Have you heard of that?
The ego finger?
The ego finger, which is the walkway out the middle of the stage that runs into the crowd.
I thought it was called an ego ramp.
An ego ramp, right.
Finger is like the Bono one that goes right out.
Yeah, yeah, the ego finger. The support band are always banned from using the ego finger. That is only for the main act.
Got it.
And what happened, the tradition is that the main act will play a prank on the support band just before they go on stage on the last night. So Trey Cool from the band had got himself a leaf blower and like bags and bags and bin liners full of glitter. And as they walked on, he just switched on the leaf blower, wallop, there you go, covered in glitter, hosed them down. So Van McCann decided that he would have a little act of rebellion. So he kicked off the chain that was covering the eagle finger and marched out and played the gig on his own, on his guitar. And stole the
whole gig.
I think he played, I think they said they played a few songs there anyway. Yeah,
right,
yeah,
right.
Yeah. But kind of stealing their thunder and maybe crossing the line a little bit.
Did they get in trouble for that?
I believe they did. They didn't say this, but I believe there was a little bit of
Green Day, the real punks.
A telling off. How dare you steal our eagle finger? But I like that notion of the act of rebellion, you know, doing something that was just a little bit, a two-finger salute back to somebody who's telling you what to do. I had a really, really petty version of it this week. I travel a lot down to London from Edinburgh on the plane, right? What annoys me more than anything are people who don't put their trays back, Matt.
I mean, already this is in a different sort of ballpark to Green Day and the Catfish in the Bottom and a massive gig in America.
Correct. It's a very petty act of rebellion, but it was one nonetheless. So it bothers me when people just leave it for somebody else to pick up. You know, who do you think you are, right? Just put your own stuff back, right?
It's so Partridge.
I know, it's so Partridge. And it's just really winding me up. And a character did it the other day, and I nearly said, can you put them away? And I thought, no. They'd left a little bit of money in the tray. So I just put the trays away and left the money. You know, a little act of rebellion.
That is one of the most rock and roll things I think I've ever heard.
This is Radio X. Gordon Smart. Matt Morgan.
Time for a returning feature we like to call...
Hey Matthew, what do you see?
Hey Matthew, what do you see? Carl Fialka. What a talent he was.
Brilliant.
I see the A-team. Right, Matt Morgan, what have you seen that you'd like to share with us? Or me?
I've seen a cynical PR stunt.
Oh no.
By a restaurant.
Oh.
Do you want to hear about it?
Well, yes. Well, we're here.
You've probably heard of Bring Your Own Bottle.
B-O-B.
B-Y-O-B.
Sorry, yes.
Bring Your Own Bottle.
Bring Own Bottle.
That's what you call it. You can choose, but this, right, bring your own table.
Right.
I know. Yes. Go with me on this. Pop-up restaurant, Trattoria Birra Moretti, with acclaimed Italian chef, I mean, I'm just promoting them here, Gennaro Contaldo, will run from June the 12th to the 15th at Covent Garden, London. Bring any sort of table you want, right? So they'll supply chairs, food, drink.
Right.
You just have to bring a table. Square tables, round tables, coffee tables, pool tables, even massage tables are all welcome. As long as you can sit comfortably around it, the restaurant, which I won't name again, will provide chairs, food and drinks, right? If you, and then they've tacked on something about the campaign to end loneliness.
Oh, I'm not buying it.
Not having it?
Well, not if you turn up on a massage table, like lying on your own massage table.
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, no, I just think it's one of those PR stunts, isn't it? Where you can imagine a group of highly paid PR executives sitting around a table going, right, we've got a restaurant.
But well, they brought themselves.
They brought them themselves, yeah. I'm not having it, Matt. No, I'm not entirely impressed by that at all.
I mean, for a free dinner. I mean, also, surely there's like camping tables. There's like easy to carry tables.
Of course,
it's not like a pool table. No one's going to be wheeling a pool table across London for a free dinner.
I don't really understand the meaning of it, the point of it. So you, well, what do you get? Do you get some kind of... You're guaranteed a table if you bring your own one, is that it?
Basically, I suppose. I mean, unless this is to cover up some sort of misfire in their ordering of tables.
Yes.
Maybe. But...
What you'll find, that might be the actual filming of the next series of The Apprentice.
A restaurant without tables.
But, how do we fix this?
I've been to that restaurant without lights. Have you ever been to the dinner in the dark thing?
No, I've not, no.
Oh, that's good.
I wouldn't trust myself at dinner in the dark, would you?
No, I mean, I didn't trust myself. I mean, it was...
So is it as obvious as it
it's
sounds?
Weird.
I don't know about it at all.
All right, no, it's completely in the dark. The waiters are all blind people, so like for them, it's not, you know, they're not bumping into stuff like you or I would be.
Yeah.
You sort of you put your hand on their shoulder. This has been going for quite a few years.
Yeah.
And then they lead you to your table, and then you sit down, and then they bring, you know, you order just sort of verbally. There's no menu to look at. It's completely dark. It's not just like a bit dark.
Yeah.
It's like your eyes are no different, closed or open. You know, like
right,
you can't see your hand in front of
your
face.
Yeah, yeah.
But when I went there, because it's weird. Like once you can't see your food, it tastes differently. And it tastes different. And I was eating what was meant to be, it was chicken, but I was convinced it was pork. And I was like, this is pork, this is pork. And the girl next to me was a Muslim. And I then convinced her. I was like, no, this is dead. She was like, seriously, do you think this is pork?
Right.
So then I caused this scene in the dark.
Of course you did.
Where they had to come and say, no, it's not, because you can't see it.
Right, yeah.
And I'd sort of ruined it.
So the point is, you ruined the experience. But the point is, it changes your perception of food if you can actually see it when you eat it. It's funny that I was over at North Greenwich the other day. I had a meeting over there. And they do that dining in the sky thing. Have you seen it? Where they pick up a table of about 14 with a crane. And they have chefs in the middle of the table who are doing sort of teppanyaki stuff, you know. And there's people just sort of floating around in the air on this table with supported chairs. About, I don't know, 80 feet maybe? About a 10-metre diving
attached
board.
Attached to the table?
Yeah, so you're just kind of strapped in with a seatbelt. But I was just thinking, that's just, I think, quite a rubbish principle, isn't it? I don't see what you stand to gain from it.
Well, that's good for Instagram, but the dinner in the dark is useless. Because they're sort of social media.
Therein is the problem. It's good for Instagram. It doesn't matter.
Radio X. Good and smart. Matt Morgan.
Some classic Oasis on Radio X. That's Slide Away. Something that I've done in the last year. Ah, dear. Matt Morgan and Gordon Smart, we are standing in for Johnny Vaughan for the next couple of weeks. Matt, we found out last time you were in that you were pretty good at offering wisdom, and you seem to be sort of a wise soul when it comes to tackling difficult situations.
Very good at other people's problems.
Yeah, just your own that are an issue.
Yeah.
But you've been quite helpful recently as well, because I've been getting myself into a right old fankle, really tied myself up in knots over a silly misunderstanding.
Right, so let's just start. Right, so you knew Noel before I knew him. Like,
yeah, but... 2004, I think I first met him.
Right, okay. And then you'd be like good friends.
Yeah, well, we went to the 40th birthday.
Stayed at his house.
Stayed at his house. All that. The kids all know each other. We've been all over the world, done some mad stuff together. I had a brilliant laugh. Like, he's been so good to me over the years. It's unbelievable. In fact, without him in my old job saying to people, actually, he's all right, he can trust them, I think I'd have been in a bit of a pickle. But getting his blessing has been such a huge help to me in my life.
Right.
And it's something I'm very grateful for. And that's why this last year has been quite difficult.
So I knew that you'd had not fallen out. I only heard it from you that you were like, oh, yeah, me and Noel, I'm not really talking to Noel at the moment, right?
I annoyed him, yeah.
You annoyed
spectacularly.
Him. But then your side of the story, to me, painted you as this sort of heroic figure who accidentally brought some people to a, can I say this?
Yeah,
to a like backstage area thing.
Yeah.
And then on the tour bus, and they behaved badly and you got the blame for it, right?
That's not a bad little summary, yeah.
Okay, so when I asked Noel about it, he said, that's not what happened at all. I'm not going to do the voice.
Oh, no.
He said, this makes you sound very cool, I think.
Oh, no.
You got on his tour bus and then demanded that the tour bus gave you a lift home. And you were driving down, like, country lanes in, like, deepest, darkest Scotland.
Yeah.
Saying, no, it's just around this bend. No, it's just over this hill, just through this villages, across the Swee Bridge, and all this stuff. And Noel said, like, he was meant to be sleeping overnight on the tour bus.
Yeah,
he
had
a gig the next day.
Oh.
And basically, you commandeered a tour bus, like some arrogant madman, right? Up the front, probably topless.
Oh, dear.
Bellowing at the driver to take you home in the tour bus. Man. And so he said, like, well, that's all that happened. Like, you know, and after that, we were a bit annoyed about it.
Yeah, I can see how he saw that happening like that. But oh, dear me.
Hang on, those two stories don't add up at all.
He's actually conflated the two stories as well, because the worst thing is, it's happened twice now. It's happened twice.
God.
I know. The first time was at Tea in the Park, right? And he'd headlined, and it was an amazing day. It was brilliant. But getting out of the old Tea in the Park site was a nightmare, and everyone was coming back to mine to have a party afterwards, right? Which would have been great. Had it just
including
been,
Noel,
including Noel and Sarah and all the rest of the gang, everybody was coming back to mine.
Right.
And for some reason, there was a real. I said to the tour manager before we left, I was like, this is going to be a nightmare. Do you realise how difficult it is to get out of this? The site isn't coping well with traffic.
Just because of the cars trying to leave, right?
Because we'd been there the night before, and the Sabian mob were there, and we did the backdoor shuffle so quickly and got out there on these secret back roads and all the rest of it. Right. But no, we got stuck in the main traffic getting out of it. So we were going through a journey that takes me 20 minutes now to my house from where we had the gig. Took an hour and 15 minutes. So by the time we got to the house, he got out and he went, I thought he said it was around the corner. I'm like, oh, it is. It's only 8 miles. And he was like, been in the car for... And so I knew that wasn't good. So that was about 3 years
ago. So that wasn't on a tour bus. That was in cars.
This had happened before. That was in tour buses as well.
Okay,
so he had the missus and all this. This time round, we were all steaming at this gig in Perth. And he invited me onto the tour bus to have a look around, because he got this new tour and it was amazing. It was absolutely amazing. And we had taxis picking us up in town, but it was quite hard to get into town. So I had said to the driver, we just nip us back into town, because otherwise it's going to take us forever to get out at this time of night. And he went, yeah, no problem at all.
Okay.
What happened? He was Noel's normal driver. And this is where it went horribly wrong. So Noel showed me around the bus. In the meantime, my wife's got on with a gang of folk that knew Sarah, who I kind of know as well.
Right.
And they were all absolutely steaming. And Noel's a creature of habit. The next thing, somebody asked him for a picture on the bus, and I'm tearing my hair out, panicking, thinking this is a disaster. And the bus has left. And I'm thinking, we need to get off as soon as we can, but we couldn't, because we were in a contraflow with all the other traffic coming out of the festival. And they sent us on a one-way all round the houses, which was nowhere near where we needed to go. I live 10 minutes from that site.
Right.
And it ended up one second time taking that. And he came, and at one point I went downstairs and said to the driver, look, this is not going to be good for you or me. You need to just drop us off here. I can tell the mood's not good. And I could see you sending messages to Sarah battering me for it. I was like, oh no, get off. And by the time I went back upstairs, I heard a glass being smashed. And it wasn't good, Matt. It wasn't good.
How did that resolve itself?
And, well, you just sent me a pretty bad message. And then Sarah sent me even more bad messages. And then I've spent a year beating myself up about it. And then the next day I got on the plane back to London and Sarah and the kids were on it. And we had a bit of a debrief. I see, like a kind of, I got a pasting offer for it. And
really?
Do you know what? I hold my hands up. It didn't go well. It was a disaster. And I feel so bad about it, because I never want to think I'm taking the...
Why didn't you just sort of like send the messages and deal with it then and go, look, this is what happened?
I did. Just stone cold silence. Just disastrous. But we're
going to fix this. I'm going to rebuild that bridge.
We will fix it at some point.
Radio X. Gordon Smart. Matt Morgan.
Noel Gallagher and I, I've known each other for a long time. Managed to mess it up spectacularly last year with a series of bumbling stupidity and embarrassing moments, which normally they used to get laughed off. But I think now that I'm a 39-year-old, aging, bespectacled waste of skin, that just binned me. So help me out of it, Matt. How do I fix it?
Well, look, this is what I think at the core of this problem is. There is two things going on. There's a personal relationship and there's a professional relationship. Because like when you were press, you know, a journalist, there was a sort of two-way street of like professional stuff going on, right?
Yeah.
And so like you coming to gigs was like you know, you're meant to cover the gig, come positive stories, whatever.
Yeah.
Okay. So I think your relationship has been formed at a point where it's tinged with professionalism, right? So what happens when you get on the bus? Like, say I did that, I'd still probably get blanked for it or get told off or whatever. Yeah. But like, because there's never been anything professional going on, it is easier to sort out.
See, you have crossed that. You have crossed that Rubicon now, haven't you? Because you do work with him.
I have interviewed him. I suppose we have done some work stuff.
So go on. What do I do?
I think what you do is you need to go on the personal side of things, because it's like it's a bit clouded, isn't it? Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think what you need to do is what I would say to my own children, which is you have to apologise.
Yes.
You have to like contact him and say I'm sorry for that. Don't even get into the sort of driver and all this. You know, just don't get into
mea culpa, am I fault, sorry, won't happen again.
And just say that, you know, I miss you, buddy.
I miss you, buddy. It's been such a tough
little boy.
I haven't been to a good gig for over a year now. Oh man.
Oh yeah, but you don't say that.
Okay.
I miss the backstage passes.
This is Radio X. Gordon Smart, Matt Morgan.
You got one for me, a minor act of rebellion.
I really had to think about this because I thought I was quite rebellious, but it turns out I'm a real square. But one thing I do is, you know, if you go into certain food places in London, can I list them? Pret-a-Manger.
Yes.
Itsu, places like that, right? Mm. At the till, they say, are you eating in or taking away? Because to eat in,
you pay VAT.
VAT, right? So it becomes like 20% more expensive.
Yeah.
So I always say, I'm taking away, and then I eat in.
Aha. So who are you really rebelling against there? It's the government more than...
Government, really?
Yeah, yeah.
Because they've never like thrown me out. But everyone who's eating in has a tray.
Yeah.
So you're the dirty little man with the bag. But what I do is, and this is the truly pathetic part, I mime the fact that I've sort of forgotten, whatever, I'll just eat it here. So I don't just do it boldly.
And you laughed at my version of rebellion in an airport.
But at least I'm kicking against the government.
You are,
kicking against.
Just common courtesy, Matt.
This is Radio X. Gordon Smart. Matt Morgan.
Talking about pathetic.
Oh, I've got a good one.
Pathetic acts of rebellion.
Truly pathetic.
Come on then.
But I was victorious.
Well, that's all that matters.
Right, I went to the post office, this is a while ago. Now, I've had things go through the post and get opened by accident, right? So I stapled along the top of the envelope, right? I was sending stuff to my accountant, like receipts and stuff. The man behind the counter in the post office said, don't staple these. It can... I said, why not? He goes, it's unfair. I said, well, why can't you staple it? He goes, because it can hurt the postman's hands, right?
Right.
And I was like, really?
Oh, no, what have you done?
No, and I nail-gunned a postman to a tree. I said, well, hang on, like, sometimes the thing's open. I want to make it safe, like it's your fault. Anyway, I had this argument. He goes, postmen prick their fingers on the staples. They hate it. It's really selfish of you, blah, blah, blah. We had this sort of argument. And then at the end, and I was like fuming, at the end, he stapled my receipt and handed it to me. And I went, ow! And I had, it was the best feeling in the world. He was gutted. I walked out of there so happy. And then you think,
that's brilliant.
Have a look at yourself, mate.
That was a victory, wasn't it? 83.96 at Radio X, what was your pathetic act of rebellion? Some great stuff coming in here. From a mobile number ending 600, my boss told me my stubble was unprofessional. I need to shave it, he said. Of course, that motivated me to grow a full-on beard in protest. I like that.
And that's from Wendy. Afternoon, guys. My acts of rebellion are when I stand out of the way for someone or hold a door open. They don't say thank you. I then very loudly shout, you're welcome. Thanks, Lisa from Manchester. Yeah. I mean, is that an act of rebellion or is that just sort of petty...
Sarcasm. I quite like the rebellion in it. What a real rebellion would be just to grab the person and close the door on them. You know, just actually...
Well, like Vinnie Jones.
Yeah, yes. Yes.
Slam it repeatedly.
That's the way to deal with it. This is brilliant. Hello, Gordon. Hello, Matt. My petty act of rebellion is to walk the wrong way around IKEA. Hallelujah! I do this every time. It winds my partner up. I'm not having arrows telling me where to go. I'm not having arrows telling me where to go, says Alan in Warrington. That's class, isn't it?
That's good.
Radio X. This is Radio X. Gordon Smart. Matt Morgan.
I read this quote about children, right? And it said, the world that you're, that you put your children in, or whatever the world that your children, your child is in, right, as a kid, will define the parameters of their world forever.
Right.
So if your kid's into football and plays in a football team and stuff like that, they'll sort of relate to the world as if, you know, like, oh, sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. They'll use football as the model for the world, right? So it's obviously good to introduce them to something wholesome at a point where they're going to use that as the rules for life.
Understood. Right, I'm with you. I'm with you.
My son is not in a, like, crazy way where we just leave him with the PlayStation for 4 days and go away, but like, he's into games like Minecraft, and he uses like, even when he plays, he's like, oh, this is level one, and then you can unlock these, you know.
Yes.
And I start to think, hang on a minute, that's a bit weird, like, everything is about video games and the sort of nomenclature, to use a big word, of video games.
What does that word mean?
It means to use the words that are, you know.
Yes.
Like the, I don't know. I've got no other synonyms. Synonyms, another word.
Yeah.
But like, and honestly, I was in the car with him the other day. We were parked up and I let him sit in the front.
Mm.
And it was really sunny. And he honestly said to me, Dad, can you turn the brightness down?
Wow.
In a car about the sun, right? Another example of it, we're at my sister's house and she's got a seesaw, two-seat seesaw.
Yeah.
And he said to his cousin, oh, come, and his cousin got on, and he said, oh, wow, this is really good. I've only ever played this in one player mode. About a seesaw.
Oh, man.
Right? That's getting cyborgy.
Do you get a one-seated seesaw? Do you mean on either end?
No, he was on the seesaw. You know, like on a swing set, he was sitting on one end. Right? Yeah. So he'd never, I mean, basically, it's a chair without someone else. But, so his bigger cousin got on.
Right,
and was,
yeah.
And he was like, oh, wow, this is amazing. I've only ever played it in one player mode, which is deeply disturbing.
What was, like, the last time you were in, we had that conversation about somebody who came up to me and said, it's nice to meet you. IRL, in real life.
In real life.
Like, well, what other life would you have met me in?
Well, he means apart from online.
Digitally. That's just annoying.
It's not, that makes sense to me.
Okay, right.
So
well,
I'm halfway there, so maybe I'm to blame. But it's not just my son, right? A friend of ours, Nicola, she's an adult. We went to Centre Parks, not just me and her, with the kids and everyone, right? Yeah. There was glowworms there, and I've never seen glowworms. I thought they were like a thing from cartoons or something, right? But they look like little bugs with an LED on the back of them.
Right,
it's really weird, right? Green LED. We were looking at one, and me and her were both going, oh my God, it's amazing. She goes to me, it's amazing. Zoom in. It's like we're outside looking at a bug.
What? She was directing your eyeballs to focus more.
As if, A, why was I in control of it? And B, you're outdoors at Centre Parks looking at an insect.
That's so alarming.
So my concern now, well, you know, I'm not overly concerned, but I think we're over-reliant on technology. We're probably becoming cyborgs.
Right. Okay. That's quite a big
statement. I can't go to the toilet without my phone.
Right.
Not physically.
Might to take a picture? What you produced?
I use it as a lever.
Rip my...
This is Radio X. Gordon Smart. Matt Morgan.
Technology's taken over, really, Matt, isn't it?
It has.
And it's a worry. It's a real worry. Here's an example from Michelle Arbuckle. Thanks for this, Michelle. My 2.5-year-old thinks the TV is a big tablet. It's quite a common one, this, isn't it?
It's common.
It doesn't help that when I pull up YouTube on the telly, I use the remote to move the videos and select the ones he wants to watch as he swipes and taps. So she's an enabler.
Yeah.
She's confusing the child.
She's enforcing the behaviour there.
Don't worry about it, Michelle.
My TV at home's covered in little fingerprints.
Yours?
Yes. What's this? Oh, yeah, Scott Davis here says that young boys will no longer know the joy of finding adult magazines in a bush.
Art pamphlets.
I mean, he's gone another way with it.
He has, yes. But yes, technology might have made that habit redundant for anybody who's of our vintage.
Yeah, no, that's probably, it's never going to happen again, is it?
Who are those people in the woods?
I can't believe those magazines still sell, because who's buying them?
Well, an ageing readership, Matthew. An ageing readership.
Committed readership.
Here's one. Tom in London. I work at a car garage and a 17-year-old lad came in with a problem with his 1997 Vauxhall Corsa. The in-car iPhone charger wasn't working. So we booked it in to investigate. We couldn't find the in-car charger, so phoned the customer. Turns out, after phoning him, he was trying to push the iPhone into the cassette player. When we explained it was a cassette player, he replied simply, "What's a cassette? What's a cassette, mate? What's a cassette?"
Radio X. Gordon Smart. Matt Morgan.
Whilst house hunting, my fiancé and I were walking around a street looking for a particular house. As we couldn't find it, and we're close to giving up, she says, look in Google Street View, as if Street View would be more effective than the real world view.
Yeah, but I think we trust apps and use them so much, more than we do like looking around. We think, well, you know, I'll Google that. Or, yeah. Like, when I'm driving somewhere, I could literally have like checked before I leave, like an old fashioned dad, and gone, right, it's M25, A21, you know, whatever, get the three names of the roads.
AA route planner, print it out.
Easy, right? Or just even look at a map or just sort of. Yeah. But I think sat nav makes you so dependent on it.
Massively.
Stop looking at the road, stop reading signs.
You're going to sound like a really old man when I tell you this one, right? When I qualified as a journalist, I used to go to the local petrol station and buy the local map. So if you're a little town somewhere in Scotland, you wouldn't have any way of using the internet. I didn't have a mobile phone. You're chasing a story. If you had to find somebody...
Go and buy an OS map.
Yeah, you had to buy a map.
And
yeah,
mark like, things on it. I'm going to start here by the old mill.
Correct. Oh dear, there's a story about that, but we'll do it another time. But yeah, it was proof that, you know, so I had no mobile phone.
Right.
I had no email. I had no internet to use. So how do you find somebody? There was no electoral roll online, so you had to go to a library or you had to find a birth certificate or a marriage certificate.
Phone hacking.
Ah, just you pack that in, son. I welcome you back here with open arms. You throw that at me. Cried.
Huh?
Do you want to give us one?
Shall I read these?
You have one of these, yeah. Just wallowing in your great joke.
when people stop you for directions and you give them incorrect directions, sending them to the back of the beyond, now Google Maps, damn you.
Yes.
Got from Wolverhampton.
So you can't do the wind-up anymore when somebody stops a car and says, excuse me, can you give me directions?
I've never done that.
Have you never done that?
No.
I used to,
these people asked for directions. They were French and I was in Dartford and they were asking where Dover was, right? Like, I know exactly.
So
but I know the main road to get there is the A2.
Yeah.
And I started to draw them a map, and then halfway through drawing the map, realised I don't know how to draw this map. So I simply turned that road that I was drawing into the pole of a street sign. So I drew a street sign with the letters A, with the road name A2 on it.
That's quite good.
And I sort of showed them that. Yeah. And it was ridiculous.
Imagine their horror, the lovely French couple as they found themselves in Dartford.
Drawing a map. He's drawn a sign.
was that when you were your 8-year-old boy? Hello, Mr. and Mrs. From France.
I'm going to bring those tapes in.
Keep sending them in, 83936 and at Radio X. We'd love to know all about you. We'll have one more. Okay, we're currently having work done in the garden. I checked the progress on live CCTV from my desk at work to find the builders on a tea break again. I found myself trying to skip real time on the CCTV like it was a YouTube video to see that after the tea break. It's mad, that, isn't it? I've got an app on my phone that I can watch what's happening at the house in Scotland from here.
Really?
But yeah,
you
it does.
Know that?
If you have any vulnerability, that can be a bit.
Oh, you mean
watching.
Outside? You can see the.
Well, yeah, cameras outside.
I like that doorbell thing you can get now.
Ringle.
So you can. I'm just in the shower. Things like that.
Yeah. The thing is, my mate Little Martin from Line of Duty, he just keeps getting videos in the morning of himself getting home at 4 a.m. But he's like,
this idiot.
Oh, he films himself like, can he can't put the key in the door or use his Oyster card, whatever he's doing.
Radio X, Gordon Smart, Matt Morgan.
Mike James from Ashford in Kent says, I once tried to take a screenshot of the rain that was splashing on my screen while I was walking along. I once had this app. Actually, the kids were playing this game on my phone. And Katie saw me do it, and to my eternal shame. I was like, you put your finger on the colour you want, and then you draw.
Yeah.
And it just wasn't working. And I looked at my fingertip as if like, where's the red paint? and she saw me out of the corner of her eye, and she went, I just saw you do that.
Yeah, I've seen a similar one. I think you might have mentioned it. I saw Kate check the weather app for what the weather's like outside.
Yeah.
And I'm like, just have a look out the window.
Do that.
Try old, an old-fashioned
trust. You're more likely to trust the app than real life.
Than your own eyes. I knew I was spending too much time on a computer when I dropped my pen and looked around for the undo button. That is amazing. Shortly afterwards, I quit my job in VFX and went back to college to study ceramics. Kate in Hertfordshire. Thank you very much, Kate. That's so true.
I've done that while writing with a pen.
Yeah.
And you think, like, delete. Oh, no.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Cross out.
Where is the button?
This is Radio X. Gordon Smart. Matt Morgan.
Just been told by the producers, two of them, I don't know what a collective noun of producers is, that my inane chat isn't good enough and we need to go straight into a story from Matt Morgan. This week's been great for my confidence, Matt.
This is slightly more structured inane chat, though.
Okay, I mean, right.
You know. Now, I saw this thing on Twitter, right? Hawksmoor Manchester, right? Hawksmoor's a good restaurant, isn't it?
Meat.
All over the place.
All about the meats.
Meat. They tweeted, to the customer who accidentally got given a bottle of Chateau Le Pain Pomerol, I think that's how you say it. 2001.
Monge 2.
2001, I was thinking that's not very old wine, but actually
it is
an 18-year-old wine. Which is £4,500 on our menu last night. So they accidentally gave away a £4,500 bottle of wine. Hope you enjoyed your evening. To the member of staff who accidentally gave it away, chin up. One-off mistakes happen and we love you anyway.
Right? Ah, fair play.
But, right?
Is it true?
The cynic in me. I mean, they've obviously, they've just lost £4,500, right,
yeah,
or whatever. And then they've thought, that's good PR, isn't it?
Yeah.
So their Twitter person has thought, right, let's not look like, if they were on Twitter going, right, whoever did this is going to be fired, then it really backfires. They lose more money, right? So, I mean, that's interesting, isn't
so
it?
So many questions. I want to know if the couple who got it were aware.
That's what I think.
That it was £4,000.
Right, so apparently they bought a bottle, they actually wanted or ordered a £260 bottle of wine.
Still a punchy bottle of wine.
Once it's up to £14, I start to think, this is a bit much, right?
Did you order the second one from the bottom, Matt?
Sorry, yes. Always the second one from the bottom. Yeah, yes, yeah. Not the house. I was turning my nose up at that. Oh dear, I'm not an animal. I'll have the £14 bottle, please. But right, so they were going for £260 bottle of wine. They actually so they had this £4,500 bottle of wine,
yeah,
and they reordered it. They went, oh, let's have another one of them, right? So obviously it was good, but they didn't have any more left. That's probably when they realised, hang on, they've, you know, realised what they've been drinking, right? But I think those, if you've spent £260 on wine, you're going to think this tastes amazing, aren't
you? Of course you are. Right? Yeah, of course you are.
I definitely don't think they were
it's good.
This is brilliant for 260 quid. I got this tastes more like 4,500.
What is the difference between 260 quid and £4,000 when it comes to wine?
Yeah, I'd like to try a wine that is that expensive, and I honestly don't think it would be any better than Casalero del Diablo.
Do you remember the last time you were on, I told a little story about something that happened in Tesco's, and it was somebody on Twitter said, that never happened. There's a special Twitter handle for that. No, but do you think it's true? That's the other side of it.
Yes, I do.
What proof is there?
What, do you think they might have just made it up? And that really, it's just a PR stunt.
It's not beyond the realms of possibility, right? So a couple buy a bottle of wine for 260 quid and then accidentally get one for £4,000. I didn't realise you could even get a bottle of red wine in Hoxmoor for £4,000. And we've given them 3 mentions, so they've now had the equivalent advertising value of that bottle of wine.
But also, like, if you are a staff member there, right, that's a huge problem, isn't it?
That is a massive problem.
That's a big screw-up, let's call it.
Yeah.
Like, they've been so reasonable about that. You can't run a business like that.
I've made a mistake.
Don't worry, guys. Yeah. Just give them the big champagne bottle in the window.
If that waiter is listening, I can make you feel better in the knowledge that I made a couple of mistakes in newspapers that were a lot more expensive than that.
This is Radio X. Gordon Smart. Matt Morgan.
The most expensive mistakes you've ever made. We've had loads. Go on, Matt.
This is just... Oh, this pains me. In late 2009, I had several hundred bitcoins, which were worth nothing at the time. I gave away the computer they were stored on at the height of the Bitcoin boom, where I had lost close to £900,000. Makes me sick thinking about it. There's no name there.
Jeez.
So ashamed.
That is brutal.
I thought bitcoins, when you pay for them, you get a code. Mm-hmm. Like, he could still have... I mean, they're out there somewhere.
That's worth looking for, isn't it?
Yeah. It's worth £1 million, pretty much.
Spend some money on a detective to go and find that if you're going to get £900,000. Unbelievable.
Break into the person's house. No, I wouldn't.
This one is actually the most damaging financially out of any of the ones we've had so far, if it is true.
I think so.
More than
the Bitcoin?
Oh, yeah, way more than the Bitcoin. My dad once shut down the North Sea oil field because he turned off the wrong bit of kit. How about that for an expensive mistake?
Yeah, but how long for? I reckon Bitcoin's winning, honestly. This is pretty bad. Listen to this. I was once bidding on eBay for a rare comic. Sad, I know. But I wanted to win, so I went for a significantly higher bid, thinking that would do it. Logged off, went to bed. Got my mail in the morning saying I'd won, and logged on to pay, and realised where I thought I'd bid £100, I'd bid £10,000. The seller refused to accept it was an error, and it took 9 weeks to get it overturned and cost me £440 in fees.
Oh, that's easy to do, isn't it? Easy to do that, I think. Yeah. Accidentally forget to put, or you think you've pressed the full point.
Decimal point.
Oh, this is good. When Liverpool won the Champions League final from being 3-0 down, I shouted to the barmaid, give me that massive bottle of champagne at the back of the bar. This is going wrong, isn't it? Before she had a chance to tell me the cost, I opened it, started spraying it over myself and my friends to celebrate. It was £517. I had to borrow money from my friends to pay for it. It's from Dwayne and Lynx. Thank you, Dwayne. That's good. That's kind of nonsense I would do.
Yeah, that's Sam Howlett here. This is pretty shameful. My most expensive mistake is still costing me. I decided to sponsor a child in Sierra Leone, but misheard the monthly cost as £2.60 instead of the actual £26.50. I thought it'd be poor form to turn them down after I'd shown such initial enthusiasm.
Yes, an embarrassing letter to write, isn't it? You know what the child I've sponsored for £26.50 a month?
That's too expensive, actually. Yeah, I don't want to back out of that.
To the tune of £2.60.
I don't care that much.
This is Radio X. Gordon Smart, Matt Morgan.
Last night, because we've got this life back, because we do a different shift rather than the 7 till 10 thing, I went for a run when I got home last night, which was a beautiful night in London. The weather was great. Ran along the canal, up past Lord's Cricket Ground, all that. Ran all the way back. It was a bit of a mess when I got back, because it'd been a while since I'd run. And as I was turning the corner to where my flat is, there was a couple of a certain age, I would say probably 60s, maybe even late 60s, right, who, it's fair to say, had had a right good go at the drinking. Like I'd say an all-day session.
What were they wearing? Like, what sort of...
So he had jeans on that could have been from 1987 and probably hadn't been... Like, they were good worn-in jeans, you know?
Right.
It looked like what I would describe as a free T-shirt from the pub, you know, like a Belhaven Best written on it or something like that. And his... I'd imagine maybe it was his girlfriend, his wife or his partner, was wearing exactly the same. Pretty much exactly the same.
Right.
And they were having a right old go at each other. Like a really, really horrific go at each other. And I kind of ran past and I thought, I'm going to have to intervene here because that's not good. So I came back and I just spoke to them like children. Just like really kind of swore as well. I can't do that on the radio. But I was
was it sort of like borderline violent?
Yeah, I think she was about to go for him, but I think he was going to get there first. So I just went full Scotland. I went, right, you two, come here. And I was sweating. I was dripping with sweat. And they just both looked at me and in beautiful synchronization said, go away, in another word.
Yeah.
You sweaty sock. Sweaty sock.
And you can't really come back to that.
And I just laughed. I was like, yeah, fine, no problem. Leave you to it then. Cheerio.
But you united them again.
I united them in their hatred of Scotland.
I've stepped in similar situations. It's the worst thing you do. When it looks like there's a couple arguing and it looks like the man's gonna hit her, you know, and then you say something and the woman kicks off at you.
Yeah
happened to me more than once in my life.
I think it's the right thing to do. I still stand by
that. Still gotta do it.
I did it on the tube at Christmas as well. A woman had come on dressed for what must have been a Christmas party, and two lads had clearly either said something or touched her, and she sitting opposite me, she started crying, and I was like, I'm not having that. So I just turned around without thinking about it and just went, Lads, you need to apologise for this. And they both turned round and they were giant sort of, I don't know, maybe sort of Georgian, Russian, Eastern European, big lads. Mm-hmm. One of them in a vest in December. And he just turned around and looked at me.
You sweaty sock.
Fortunately, the tube stop arrived. They got off and I was like, yeah, had a word with them, didn't I? Yeah. Nobody, everyone hiding in their books.
It's like the idea of you some sort of caped crusader jogging around London all sweaty. Yeah.
You! Stop it!
Radio X. Gordon Smart. Matt Morgan.
Just talking about being away for the weekend up in the Highlands, right? I had the lads up there on this Speyside whiskey carry-on, right? So it was pretty much 48 hours of just pouring whiskey into yourself. But it's been... I can't complain about it because the last two weekends have been incredible. I had that one in the weekend before I went to Portugal. But the problem is, both weekends, I went with proper alpha male characters, right? So I've come back feeling a little bit delicate and a little bit sensitive. So the weekend before was your man, Jamie Dornan,
right. Yeah,
who's a very handsome bloke. And then this weekend, it was 12 lads, ex-Special Forces. So I came back yesterday feeling a little bit fragile.
Did they not do little pranks on you? Weren't you sort of like... I can imagine them like setting light to your hanky and stuff. Because obviously you'd have a little hanky in your top pocket.
Hanky. You do laugh at them, a little hanky, don't you? Tell you what, you know you've had a good weekend when you come back and your top button doesn't go in. So put on about half a stone as well.
I know.
But the weirdest thing though, about coming back after those 2 weeks, because I haven't seen my kids a great deal, is my little boy, he's 9, and he's just turned into a teenager. How's that happened when I was away? But
You've been away. He's become the man of the house.
It's amazing how it happened so quickly. And I came back and he was walking around being sort of a little bit like Kevin the Teenager, the Harry Enfield character, you know?
Well, my kids do that now.
Do they?
Winter's 3.
Yeah.
And we call her a 3-nager. It's a thing.
Is it?
And she's got the attitude of like a 16-year-old girl slamming bedroom doors like madness.
You've got trouble ahead there.
I know. Winter's an absolute handful.
Yeah.
Honestly, she's nuts. Yeah. I'll get her on.
I noticed a picture of you attempting to do her hair properly.
Yeah, that was hard. So my wife went away for what she called 5 days, but with a travel day either side, it was actually easily a week. And with the sort of, so I had to do all the school run, everything, obviously, doing like packed lunches, everything.
Yeah.
But the one thing that was really hard was doing Winter's hair, which I thought I'd done, oh, that's easy. And because I used to have long hair, I used to be able to get my hair in a ponytail.
Yeah.
It's so hard because it's like fine little kid hair. And if she doesn't have her hair done, she looks like someone who lives up a chimney or something. She looks awful, right? So she's got like sort of a weird like mullet where it hasn't all grown in. So like she needs her hair done, but trying to get 2 pigtails and then put a clip in, and then that one that I took a photo of was the worst, like that was like my first attempt, and she was like, I love it. And I wasn't allowed to change it, so I had to take it to school, and the people, I was gonna say carers, preschool teachers just looked at her with sort of sadness.
And when Katie comes back after that week, you look like a total mess. The kids are fine, you know, well fed, looked after, and you're just broken.
No, I was all right, actually, because I had structure for once.
Oh, did you really?
I lack structure in my normal life because I just get up whenever. But I had to get up. You know, I just become like a sort of Sandra Bullock character in a movie where my husband's left me, just doing everything.
Radio X. Good and smart. Matt Morgan.
You're probably fun, Dad, I would say.
I am fun, but there's got to be rules.
Yeah, lots.
Otherwise, it just slips. Like Katie put up like idiot boards in the kitchen, stuck to the cupboards, like time, like everything has to happen. And I stuck to like bath time, bed to everything. I stuck to it more or less, like it was 20 minutes leeway.
Yeah, yeah.
But like, if I hadn't had that, I would have just sort of gone, you know, time would just...
Gone
like,
feral.
Yeah, basically.
Just go to the
but they like structure, kids. They don't realise it, but they do. But no, it's funny because Katie went to Miami. And so for weeks, she was like, oh, when I go to Miami.
Yeah, yeah.
And the kids couldn't get their head round. Miami was a place instead of like, they were going, when's mummy going to her Ami? Like, no, it's Miami. So when she was away, I had these insane conversations. Yeah. And Winter said... Why couldn't Daddy just go to his Ami at one point? Yeah, they couldn't get it. Even to, when she came home, they were still like, how was your Ami? It's like,
she is listening today, isn't she? Hello, Winter.
Yes, she, after I was slagging her off for being a handful, she went up to the radio and said, Daddy, I love you. So,
well, Matt, there's some camaraderie for you here. Ryan in Manchester sent a message. Says, I'm a single dad. My daughter was 4 when we split for the first year. She looked like Ken Dodd every time she stayed with me. But now I can do plats and everything. Thank you, YouTube. Cheers for that, Ryan.
Though, Ryan, can you?
Yeah.
Right. Don't want to be a nitpicker, but...
What kind of plats?
Plats. No, look, you spelled it wrong.
All right.
An eye in it, hasn't it?
Oh, like you've got a comedy writer in here. Do you give your kids a hard time about their grammar?
Yeah, I do, actually.
Good. Yes.
Yeah, but they're pretty good. Well, Winter can't write anything, obviously, but Cohen's pretty good.
When Katie came back, what was the did she do like a little sort of CSI Katie, like check the house?
No, because I cleaned up, but I did. I was like, it was counting down the minutes, and I was like, handing back care to the not back. Like I'm still, I'm not like leaving, but I was like, this is going to be like the equivalent of a mic drop. It's going to be like in mid sentence, mid feeding a child. Just boom, right, she's back from her Ami.
Radio X. This is Radio X. Good and smart. Matt Morgan. Hey Matthew,
what do you see? Makes me laugh every time Carol Fialka appears on Radio X. Come on then, Matthew.
I see people cheating at step counting trackers.
No, you don't.
I do. I see it.
Is this true? People cheat?
Yeah. You know, like when people go, oh, I've got to get my step count up.
I do that
thing. Yeah. Like people like you who use too many apps to measure every aspect of your life.
Correct.
Right. Including your private parts. Some fitness tracker users have come up with a clever hack to cheat the system to make your app think you've done more walking than you actually have, right? So there is a product which rocks your phone in an electronic cradle to make your phone think that it's walking, right? Now, you think, well, what is the point of that? That's really stupid. But actually, they do it here now, but this is from China, right? You get lowered insurance premiums.
I pay for it. I've got it.
You've got it.
I'm just thinking, where did you buy this thing?
Yeah, right.
Well, it's true. Like, if I walk a certain distance every day, I get a certain number of points. And at the end of the year, if I reach a certain amount, I get a big rebate for being healthy. And it's really, really good amount of money.
Honestly think that this is a good business idea, right?
Right.
You pick up a load of people's phones in a big sack, then you go jogging, right?
Ah, I see.
And then you hand them all back.
Like dog walking, but you do it for step counters.
And then everyone's insurance premiums go down.
Right, yeah.
I mean, where's it going to end?
Because I've heard the theory before that you attach your iWatch to the leg of a dog, for instance.
Right.
And just let your dog run around and go mental. But if I did that with my dog, I'd walk about 4 million miles a day.
Very strange, isn't it?
Yeah.
There's people are putting them on kids.
Yeah.
Just put them, send it to school.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, taped your kid's back or something. Put it on a ceiling fan. I'm not sure how that works.
Whoa. That, I see how, yeah, yeah. That's
just what, because the sensor must just be sort of like a Wii sensor, you know, like a sort of, just the repetitive motion must set it off.
Yeah, right? Mine's quite set. It knows what you're doing. Freddie Flintoff got in trouble for that, didn't he?
Did he? What?
He said he used to wear it to using bedroom Olympics. And he was measuring his heart rate.
Steps.
Yeah, does it? We're heading down a really dangerous rabbit hole.
I think what will happen next is you'll get the step counter, and if it doesn't tally up with what your heart rate's doing,
yeah.
So then you've got to. But if you're, so if it's rocking on your computer, then you've got to also get your heart rate up to match it, and then it's just too much hassle. You might as well go for a walk.
It just occurred to me, it's probably some form of fraud, isn't it? If you,
yeah.
So be careful if you're thinking about buying one of these products from China that Matt Morgan just told us about. We do not endorse this.
Radio X. Gordon Smart. Matt Morgan.
Got this thing recently when I went on holiday where it measured everywhere I'd been on skiing, right? So how fast I'd gone, all the rest of it. I was spending far too much time just looking at where I'd been there. I knew what happened.
Yeah. But when I go mountain biking, I need every, like, tells me elevation, tells me everything.
Yeah.
When you think back, like, 15 years ago, people just used to go, I've done an hour.
So exactly. So here's a question, right? Have you ever downloaded the sleep apps?
No,
so
but I was tempted by the one that records if you speak in your that one.
Yes,
you
done, I did that. Yeah, right. I did that, and then it just leads to a world of trouble, Matt Morgan.
What do you shout out?
Well, it's not so much what you shout.
Get off me!
Exactly. Yeah. No, don't. No,
fuck it's no.
It's this. It's the other noises that occur during the night.
Farting.
Well, that's one of them. Yeah, yeah. So it's
what other ones?
We'll talk about it in a minute.
Is that one of them?
That is one of them.
Bleated.
I'll play some of them to you in a minute because my kids were going through all the voice memos having a laugh because we'd recorded them talking when they were like 2 or 3.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And now it sounds ridiculous because my little boy had like this London accent. What, Dad, can I have a cake? And now he's like, wee Jimmy, or hey, what, you know? And he was laughing at his own accent. And then he's like, what's this one?
This is Radio X. Gordon Smart. Matt Morgan.
Champagne Supernova on Radio X. Classic Oasis for a Thursday afternoon. Matt Morgan and Gordon Smart were standing in for Johnny Vaughan. Matt, you knock around with Noel a lot. Could you imagine kicking about with a Little Menace from Little Venice in 1996?
Well, that'd be very different, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I don't think you'd have survived.
No, I think, yeah, like, that would have been crazy days.
Well, where are you doing in 1996?
Well, I was 19, so I just started university.
Jesters of Malice were at their peak?
Oh, they were crashed and burned.
They're gone.
I'd moved on.
They're
gone. I was
gone.
Doing art at university.
Do you ever get, does Noel tell you many good stories from back in the day when you get a chance to blather to him about it?
Yeah, but he does admit that there's huge periods of time that he can't remember.
Can't remember it at all.
Blacked out.
Love that story that he tells about right in the middle of it, 1996, at Supernova Heights, his house. So there was nothing in the fridge other than champagne. Nobody drank anything other than champagne. And Liam was round, and when you've opened the bottle and it's not quite finished, you put a fork in it just to keep the bubbles fresh. And this was just amazing to Liam. And then Noel went round to Liam's house about a week later, and he had forks in the milk,
yeah.
Forks in the orange juice.
I mean, that is funny, but how does that work? Because that can't have any scientific...
Well, it's one of those things, it's advice somebody's given you once that you follow along with without actually questioning it, like really bad rock star advice.
Yeah, yeah.
I once interviewed Ozzy Osbourne when I was horribly, horribly jet-lagged, like really could barely keep my eyes open. So I kept apologising to him because I just felt so grim. And he said, well, you know what you need to do for jet lag? And I said, what's that? And he said, put brown paper in your shoes. I said, what? He went, I'm telling you, man, put brown paper. So I went and bought brown paper, put them in my shoes.
Oh.
Yep. Didn't see him for about 6 weeks. And I was like, that brown paper ever worked? He went, idiot.
Radio X. Gordon Smart. Matt Morgan.
A That song sends shivers down my spine every time I hear it. That Unbelievable.
Song, yeah, it has. It just takes me back to, like, more than any other song.
Yeah.
I remember we used to go to Pop Scene at London Astoria 2, LA 2, which doesn't exist anymore, sadly, on Charing Cross Road. So we'd come up from Dartford, go there to this club called Pop Scene, which was like indie.
Yeah.
Indie. So whatever. When was Trainspotting?
96 it came out.
96. So I was 19. And I remember I had a shaved head and I was trying to look a bit like Renton, probably. But that song, at first I thought it was Damon Albarn from Blur.
Yeah.
I was just like, what is this?
You know, those lyrics were done, that vocal was done in one take. Just went into the vocal booth and said whatever came out his head, because there's a mad line in it about Romford, isn't there?
Going back to Romford,
because they were recording that in Romford.
Right.
I'm going back to Romford. Just saying what came into his head.
Yeah.
Absolutely brilliant. Underworld and Born Slippy taking us right back. Gordon Smart and Matt Morgan, we are in for Johnny Vaughan. Thinking of that song, it reminds me of 1997, borrowing my brother's passport and going to Century 2000 on Lothian Road in Edinburgh. And I remember the doorman, who I then later got to know, a guy called Anton, just looking at this picture of this guy with glasses and looking at me, who had no glasses and looked about 5 years old, and just going, in you go, son.
Who brings a passport to a club who's not
youthful looking people like me? Yeah, I know. And I got in and I just remember dancing really, really badly to that song, really badly to it. And I remember a girl said to me on the way to the toilets, what are you wearing?
This is Radio X. Gordon Smart, Matt Morgan.
Hey Matthew, what do you see? Hey Matthew, the A-team. What have you seen that you want to talk about?
Another thing that I've seen was an argument on Twitter. Right. I don't know how it started or where it started or whatever, but there was a debate. Do you wash your legs in the shower?
Oh, that's good.
Right?
That is really good.
I'm going to just go out on a limb here.
Yeah.
No pun intended. I don't.
You don't wash your legs?
Of course I don't.
Well, what? Would you just let little bits of suds trickle down your legs?
I mean, when I went mountain biking
legs?
At the weekend, I had mud and... Yeah. Blood on my legs, frankly. Yeah. I used those like exfoliating gloves. I've got a pair of Mickey Mouse gloves.
Have you really?
Yeah. Oh, mate, they're lovely.
Oh, you've got to introduce me to that. I've never even what are
so
they?
So nice. They're sort of, they're exfoliating gloves. They're little white gloves that are like scratchy and you clean yourself with them, right? Hang on, let's not go down.
Let's not go down. Sorry. Okay.
This is about me not cleaning my legs, but I did at the weekend when there's mud on them. But generally, a shower, hair, all the, obvious places.
Right.
You don't need to clean your legs unless something's happened to them, because the water's going down there anyway.
So you... Right, let's just get... Without sounding too specific about this, where is the tide mark? Where'd you draw the line?
Draw the line? The genitals. Frankly.
Right, so you don't go halfway down the thigh, because that's as far as your arm sort of leads.
I believe that we're not meant to scrub off the natural oils and coating of our skin too much anyway.
Right. Okay.
I think people like use these chemical shower gels. They scrub away everything. They clean every bit of, like your beard needs, people put beard oil on, right? Because we're stripping away. Why do we condition our hair?
Right.
Because we've stripped away all the natural oils.
Hold up, though. You've just told me you were wearing Mickey Mouse exfoliating gloves.
Yeah.
So that's scrubbing it off as well, is it?
Well, no, I do that sometimes, but I did that when I had muddy legs.
So let me ask you this, Matt Morgan.
So you're basically saying you do wash
your legs. I do. I have a bend right over from the hip, and I go down to the ankle and get in between the toes.
With what, though? Just your hands? With
no, suds.
On.
Get the suds in, yeah.
So you
clean
like to scrub your legs?
You've got to clean your feet properly. You're not cleaning your feet in the shower.
They're getting clean. They're at the bottom. No. Why is everyone looking at me like I'm an animal?
This is a great moment. So let me spin you around 180 degrees.
Yeah.
So you're just washing to the buttock then, not further down the thigh, the hamstring.
Yeah. No, it's like sort of as I stand where I can reach.
Right, okay.
Right, so just towards the knee maybe gets a little... It's all about the sort of upper half of your body.
But what about the area where your sock may spread up your leg? That might be slightly clammy.
Your sock may spread up your leg?
Yeah, so I know you wear a sock, a thick sock. So do you not give that a little bit of a wash?
On the ankle where the sock goes?
Yeah.
Oh, that's getting wet. All the water's going past that.
It's merely washing over you, though. It's not cleaning you, is it? You see, my brother, right, he's a dentist, and he had a lecturer at university in Dundee who was such a germaphobe, he would eat a sandwich to the bottom corner where he held it with his index finger and thumb, and then would put that part in the bin because he wouldn't come in contact with the part of the food that had been touched by the human hand because of germs.
God.
And that's quite a hard way to live your life, but you, Matt, are sailing close to the wind, my friend.
I would like, right, I would like a scientist to come here with a little swab and a petri dish.
Yes.
Swab my leg and your leg. And I don't think there'll be much more bacteria on mine than yours.
E. coli boy over there.
Radio X. Gordon Smart. Matt Morgan.
We're asking about that shower dilemma. This is so local radio, but you know what? It's got a great response, Matt. Do you wash your legs in the shower? And we've had a big response. Matt, this is what you signed up for. We're on Wednesday and that's where we've reached. Oh man, we've got 10 days to go. Legs don't sweat, so no need to be washed. I've never washed mine in the shower. They have to wait until I have a bath from the mobile number.
And that is not true medically, is it? Legs don't sweat is not. Yeah. I mean, I'm glad he's on my side, but I haven't ventured to say that. Noel Gallagher once told me that he went to the doctors in a paranoid state because he had one sweaty leg. Promise you.
He's a bigger hypochondriac than you, isn't he?
He is pretty bad.
He is quite
I think
bad,
he's all right now, but obviously when he was maybe partaking in things that might make you paranoid.
Yes.
And also being, you know, having money, you probably got a private doctor. So course, chef, probably cost him 500 quid, that's what he
looked. Yeah, they make stuff up just to get you paranoid. I remember he once asked for a second opinion on something, but I can't talk about that. But you know what I mean? There is a very wealthy medical paranoia.
Yeah.
Got a lot to live for, right enough. What about this one? I've heard that people share this attitude with not cleaning the feet. You got to wash your feet properly 10 to 12 hours a day inside a sock or a shoe. It's dirty, man, says Steve in Essex.
Yeah, no, I see what you're saying, Steve, but you're stood in the shower, gravity. Paula in Warrington now, this is absolute quality. Matt, do you at least rub one foot up and down your other leg when showering?
Oh, yes. Yeah, see?
So actually, I do wash my legs because one foot kindly washes one leg and then his brother foot washes his leg. So
do you do it with your feet though, with your little tootsies in between?
Yeah, I mean, basically showering for me is a sort of bubbly formality. And it's sort of like, I can say I've had a shower today. That's why I'm doing it.
Matt's bang on. I never wash my legs. I only do my arms if I'm treating myself, says Joe in Bradford. That's brilliant, Joe.
Yeah. I mean, do you scrub your body or do you just... Like, if shower gel's touched your arms, I just think, well, they're clean.
Well, my attitude to it is that every part of the visible surface area should be given a good scrub. And then everything underneath as well. You should cover every inch of your body with a look as far as you can get, obviously.
Well, I mean, where can you not reach?
In the middle of my back. I've not got those bendy shoulders that can get me right. Yeah. You know, I can't do that thing with touch your toes.
So you've got some muddy little part of your back that stinks with mushrooms growing out of it.
Correct. Absolutely right.
Do you see sheep with an exfoliating glove when they go through sheep dip? No. Matt wins from Andy in Anglesey. Well, the logic there is slightly flawed, but since it's on my side, I'll support it.
Well, the Sheep Island.
There's Anglesey.
Anglesey is North Wales, isn't it? The island.
Wales.
Yeah. I still.